Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
ESPN 97.5.
KFNC and 97.9 HD2 Mont Belvieu, Houston. Presented by Zadok Jewelers.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
The most interactive sports talk show in town. 713-780-3776 to call, to text, YouTube at ESPN Houston, and on Twitch at ESPN 975. Astros got back in the win column after a very dramatic game against the New York Yankees with the Framber Valdez Cesar Salazar incident. They bounced back from getting drubbed 7-1 with that 8-7 win. They were down 4-1 at one point in this game. Not going to lie, lost all faith, lost all hope, but they rallied and fought their way back for quite the dub. Now they have a chance to win a season series and a actual 3-game series against the Yankees. We'll see if they're able to get it done. My question for you right now is, what's the Paul Gallant Show magic number for the American League West, which we called over a couple of months ago, and then it got a little tight. A little tight. But have they ever actually surrendered the lead? I don't think they have. There have been close calls.
I think they're tied, right?
There's been a tie. But I don't know how they've held the lead in the American League West, or at least a share of the league in the American League West, other than divine intervention. Hashtag God wills it. Give it to me.
God wills it. God wills it.
God wills it. God wills it indeed. Woof. So, what is the magic number to win this thing? You're up 4 games on the Mariners. You're up 5.5 games on the somehow hot Texas Rangers. Rangers not dead. When you're in Texas, look behind you, because that's where the Rangers going to be, but a little closer behind you than normal. 4 cars behind you, maybe? You can see them. You can see them, though. And you're a paranoid driver. You're like Henry Hill in Goodfellas. You're looking above you. Oh, what's going on? Oh, God. Oh, man. Oh, God. Oh, man. And there's a helicopter around you. And it turns out it actually was tracking you. I think his paranoia actually ended up being correct. Maybe not. Maybe they were just trying to make you as paranoid as him to get you to have the same POV as Henry Hill. Goodfellas, amazing movie. How did it not win Best Picture? Bringing it back to the Astros. What's the magic number where we call the American League West over again? Still a good amount of baseball left. Good amount of baseball.
Yeah, how many actual games are there?
I think that there's...
That will inform this.
Slightly less than a month's worst, Sean.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
I don't have enough time.
I was just going to pull up.
77 and 63, doing a little math. Three. So they played 140 games. That means 22 games left.
Okay.
22 games left this season. The magic number as far as wins, I'm assuming the real magic number is probably something like 17.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
maybe 18 because the Mariners are four back. But I'm looking at it from a different perspective. If the Astros can get the Mariners to one more time, eight games back, I will call it. I think you would call it too. That's probably going to take some time to happen. 7 to 8 games back, both of these teams in the West, over. Much like it was a couple of months ago.
In June.
When we called the American League West over. We should have stuck with it. You know, I doubted the Astros last night. I doubted the Astros after the Mariners started to come back.
You will doubt
more.
The Astros three times before. I don't know. There is something to note.
What's that?
The Astros and Mariners have a series, a three-game series, on September 19th to the 21st. The Astros then in the season playing the A's in Sacramento for three games and then three games in L.A. against the Angels. So basically, they have – actually, if you want to go even further back, they have a Rangers series.
Yes.
And then a Mariners series.
Yes.
And then A's and Angels to end the season. Then on the flip side, so really it is like, how are the Astros doing, like, going into that series against the Mariners, to me? Because that's where there still is that opportunity for, you know, directly the Mariners to make up games very fast in that series. Now, who's the Mariners in the season with? So they, after they played the Astros, they played the Rockies, and they played the Dodgers. So the Dodgers, they'll still be playing for something. But the Rockies aren't. They haven't been playing for anything for quite a while. I think they need 14 more wins.
14 more wins, okay.
Does 14 wins get you? So or, I mean, I guess they don't have to. 14 and 8
down the stretch. That's, I mean, that's a pretty good clip.
14 wins / Mariners losses.
Okay.
Combined.
You know, like that. Like, that's a good one.
It has to, because that is what the magic number is that the magic number goes down, the other team loses.
Okay.
So there is a little bit of help from the Mariners, which you have been getting for like 6 weeks now. Oh. You've been getting a lot of help.
They're too easy.
I saw Jeff Passan retweeted, like basically cold-taked, exposed himself for, he had a tweet, let's see, on August 12th, the Seattle Mariners have won 8 straight games and are 10-1 since the trade deadline. If Houston loses tonight, the Mariners will be tied for first in the AL West. Their lineup is great. Their rotation is nasty. The back of the bullpen is dominant. They are a scary October team.
And since they posted that, the record has been pretty bad. Yes. I remember that post, too. We talked about it on the air, and I was like, damn, I'm scared of the Mariners. And I think that's when I uncalled the American League West.
And Jeff Passan last night.
So Jeff Passan's fault. I'm just a baseball casual, Jeff.
Yeah. Last night when the Astros came back to beat the Yankees as the Mariners, I think, lost to the Rays. I think it was the Rays that beat them. He quote tweeted this tweet from a little under a month ago and said, "I am the bubonic plague."
Love it.
Period.
I like Jeff. Everyone hates on Jeff.
He's a funny guy.
He's actually pretty funny. I know it's all about, hey, he has an anti-Astros agenda. No, I don't think he really has an anti-anyone agenda. Everyone had to report on that. I feel like guys like Ken Rosenthal and some of the Hall of Fame writers were perhaps a little bit more over the top. I mean, even Rosenthal interviewed Carlos Correa and didn't like push back on him when Carlos Correa basically took the microphone. It was like, let me tell you, brother, all you bitches were coming for you. Oh, you better be staying awake at night. We're going to go William Wallace on you in your bedroom. Like the ball on a chain. Remember that kill? That was a cool kill.
Was that a mace? Is that what that
I don't
called?
Know what it was. It was
flail?
Flail? It's like a bowling ball on a chain. It was awesome. That guy's face just completely gone. What a violent movie Braveheart is. Anyway, it's the Paul Gallant Show. I love that movie. I've watched it so many times. Top movies I've watched a lot. Braveheart is number one. As far as movies I've watched over and over again, Lord of the Rings, the whole trilogy, that's the second. That's the second most.
Gladiator
I've watched a lot.
I feel like that's up there.
It's definitely up there. Kingdom of Heaven as well, obviously. But... but But Braveheart's the number one. Anyway, you want to jump in on the Paul Gallant Show, you know how to do it. 713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston and on Twitch at ESPN 975. We'll predict a couple of NFL divisions on the other side, and I will tell you how the Astros could get a first-round bye. It's not as far-fetched as you'd think. Stay put.
Loot and Rain rule.
You're listening to ESPN 975. This is the Paul Gallant Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Most interactive sports talk show in town. 713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitch at ESPN 975. So, the Astros lead the American League West by 4 games. Sean and I think, have compromised that our magic number for the Paul Gallant Show is some combination, obviously, of 14 Astros wins, Mariners losses. But also, if the Astros lead the division at any point down the stretch,
yeah,
by 7 to 8 games... we will call it once again.
That is the
and repent for saying that the American League West is not a done deal after calling it in June. We will flagellate.
Yeah, we'll flagellate ourselves.
We blasphemed ourselves.
Like the game Quidditch from the Harry Potter novels, which doesn't really make sense. But if you catch the golden snitch, you just automatically win. That's the Astros if there's an 8 in the games behind column for Seattle or the Rangers, whoever's in second place at that time. If the Astros get to 8, boom, calling it.
Yes.
But until then, we count up wins and losses every night.
At some point, the Mariners have to stop
losing all the time.
Yeah. But
I hope not. I hope not.
It keeps on keeping on.
Yeah.
The Astros are probably going to win the American League West, as they always do. God wills it. But is a first-round bye completely out of the question? They actually are within striking distance. And yes, there is just 22 games left. Fangraphs gives them a 13% chance at clinching one of the top 2 seeds in the American League and getting a bye. Pretty unlikely based off of those numbers. But think about this. First off, the Tigers are starting to come back to earth. Yes, they swept the Astros not too long ago. They have since lost 7 of their last 10. Down the stretch, they do have some tough games left on the schedule. The Yankees at home, the Red Sox on the road. American League East race is definitely heating up. Boston's also playing pretty well. Talk about Toronto in just a moment. But the Tigers, the rest of the way, if you take a look at their schedule, also have a lot of series against some schlubs, the White Sox, who stink. 2 series against the Royals, who are hovering around 500. Check that. What happened to the schedule all of a sudden there? 2 series against Cleveland, who is piddling around at 500, can't score. Atlanta, who's been a massive disappointment this season. And a Miami Marlins team that was frisky for a little bit, but is no longer frisky. So I think it's going to be tough for the Astros to catch the Tigers. But right now, the season were to end today, the Blue Jays would be the other team that gets a bye in the first round of the American League playoffs. They have cooled down. They have a 71.9% chance at a bye, but they've also got the Yankees and Red Sox hot on their heels. And all three of these teams have 6 games against one another. Toronto has 3 at New York, 3 at home against Boston. The Yankees have three against Toronto, three at Boston, and three against the Tigers. Boston has six games left, three against New York, three at Toronto, also three against the Tigers.
It's like almost a perfect round robin.
Right. So there is a chance that there's a little cannibalization that takes place.
They're all putting losses on each other.
Yeah, and the Astros find their way into that spot. And would that not be the most God-willed thing possible? Would that not be the most God-willed thing if all these other teams just start beating each other? The Astros are like Jack Sparrow on that boat, standing on the mast as it docks. Like, would that not be the most God-willed thing ever?
Just coasting our way through.
Right. Like, I think there's a chance that happens. So we'll keep you posted on that. It is the Paul Gallant Show. We're continuing to predict what goes down this NFL season. Two divisions, very quickly, rather boring ones. Let's start with the NFC South because the Texans do play the Bucs this season. The Bucs are the odds-on favorite to win the NFC South, minus 120. Falcons second at plus 220. Michael Penix, the last couple of games of the year, did look good, but it also was the last couple of games of the season. I think you got to take that with a grain of salt. The Panthers are in third at plus 500. It did feel like they figured themselves out in the second half of the season. And the Saints are only plus 1,600. That is way, 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 way too low, right? Or is it too high? I forget. They should be
too short of odds.
Thank you. They should be I do not know how to speak gambling. I really don't. They should be the longest odds to win any division in the league. I know the Browns are at plus 4,000. I know that the NFC South is a little bit of a crapshoot from time to time.
Yeah, I think that's more of a statement on the top of the NFC South, but I do agree with you that I can't really see the path for New Orleans to be like above 500. If you want to tell me that they win like six games, like they don't actually get the number one pick, like I could believe that. But them going to the playoffs to me seems very unlikely. So I'm not picking the Saints, in case anyone out there was wondering.
Bucks are a very hot Super Bowl team. If you want to be different, you could take the Falcons, but I have questions about Penix. I have questions about their defense. So I'm going to take the Bucks.
Yeah, the Bucks are like, they're just so competent, you know? They're just now just a team that has, you know, they'll switch out the play caller because the previous play caller gets an NFL head coaching job, like what happened with Liam Cohen and Dave Canales before him. And Baker Mayfield just plugging along, ended up finding himself a pretty good NFL career after it looked shaky there for a while. Mike Evans still around, going to receive 1,000 yards. Emeka Buka, who's been blowing people's minds in training camp.
He's blowing the draws off.
Yeah. Their defense is solid. I think if the Falcons had a good defense, I might have picked them.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that, because they have a lot of offensive firepower. It's just, A, Michael Penix, I think, had three season-ending injuries in college.
Yes, there's that too.
And
Kirk Cousins!
Yes, and then it'd be Kirk Cousins' time. That's not like the worst thing in the world, but it's the worst thing in the world when you pair that with the defense that they have.
Yeah, the defense is sus, and I was burned by the Falcons last year.
Yeah, and neither of us are buying the Panthers.
No,
type,
no,
right?
No, yeah. I'm sorry. Dave Canales wrote a book about cheating on his wife, so F that. I'm like, by this guy, to me, like anyone who
not
does
in my
that,
locker room.
Anyone who does that, in my opinion, sucks. You wrote a book about cheating on your wife? Like, listen, I understand that relationships fail and sometimes cheating happens. Writing a book about it while staying together, almost rubbing her face in it. Like, I hope you made a lot of money on that, man. I don't think you're helping a lot of people out. Do you think people actually bought that book and are like, wow, Dave Canales wrote a book about being a whore and cheating on his wife? Man, I feel a lot better about my relationship. If anything, it's more likely to make people, I think, say, well, maybe I could dabble on the side. But you shouldn't. That's what I think.
It worked for Dave.
Yeah, he came back.
He's an NFL head coach now.
He's totally fine. He's an NFL head coach, and his wife took him back. She'll take you back, too. Like, unbelievable. Really, unbelievable. He wrote a book about it. So I actually actively root against the Panthers. On the Saints side of things, poor Marine is upset. Why do people always bleep on the Saints in Houston? What have the Texans ever won? They're rebuilding this year. At least they're not as dysfunctional as the Browns and Texans. Yes, they're very dysfunctional. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? They hired Kellen Moore because they were like, all right, well, let's sell the fan base on losing, and this is a better option than Dennis Allen. You know? So far, none of their quarterbacks are wearing a winter beanie, having emotional breakdowns over an injured teammate. Like that is a very weird thing to fixate on.
Poor Marine has an emotional breakdown every day in the chat. Like, what are we talking about here?
Poor Marine, I don't understand like why you're getting defensive, saying why is everyone in Houston dumb?
They're rebuilding. Why are you saying they suck?
Because they suck.
They're rebuilding. They suck. Yeah.
God,
we're so mean about the Texans for like 3 years.
Yes. Yes.
Until like halfway through 2023.
No, poor Marine. Listen, we like poor Marine, but he always projects like what other shows are saying on my show. Like, no, that's not what we say.
Yeah. Talk to that show.
Talk to them. Talk to those shows. But they are going to stake this season. Like, that's a pretty easy lock to make. The other division, AFC East, I'm wearing a Patriots jersey. Take all my thoughts with a grain of salt.
Okay.
Just reminding everybody of that. They are my favorite team. Bills are -330 to win it. Patriots are second at +475. Dolphins +950. Jets +2200. Let's just move the Jets and Dolphins to the side. Neither are winning it. Jets, I like Aaron Glenn. It's Justin Fields. Dolphins just feel it's like it's going to take one little push for everything to blow up. That is not to say there is no world where the Dolphins win the AFC East. I would say everything going right for the Dolphins is more likely than everything going right for the Patriots this season. But I really think it's just going to take one little push for the Dolphins.
If Tua misses time, if A-Chain misses time.
Right. And there's some serious questions about the Dolphins' defense, given some of the changes that they've made. I am excited about the Patriots going into this season for the first time in a while. Gerard Mayo, all the things I'd heard in the offseason kind of killed that for me last year. But I'm picking the Bills. I think the Bills are top to bottom, one of the top three teams in the league. And I would put, in no particular order, Ravens, Chiefs, and the Bills at the top. I'm not picking against the Bills. I think you're definitely operating with wishful thinking if you go that way. There's still, I think, another year of flushing out the remnants of bad Bill Belichick drafts and Gerard Mayo's culture. Complete failure last season before they can get there. And they're still cutting some veterans. They got to build up the offensive line. They need some more pieces on defense. There's not a lot of depth. I'm not sold on Drake May. So, Bills. Bills, I would say the Dolphins have a better chance of being the team that potentially knocks them off. So I'm taking the Bills. Sean, what say you?
Yeah, agree with the Bills. One of the best teams in the league. Patriots, like you said, I think they're kind of a year away. I think they can... You know, 7-10. You know, let's get a 7-10 on the board for the Patriots. That would be them moving in the right direction. Broncos. I agree with you. Dolphins. I agree with you. Where there's a chance that they are good, but there's also a much higher chance that they are a little bit of a Jenga tower. Where if you pull any one piece, it all kind of crumbles. Even on defense, like their pass rush is good.
Bradley Chubb.
If you lose any of those guys, now your defense stinks.
Right.
Same thing with your offense and your quarterback, your one of your receivers, and your running back. If any of those guys get hurt, it gets tough.
We're going to keep predicting NFL divisions. Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It's the Paul Gallant Show, most interactive sports talk show in town. 713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston and Twitch at ESPN 975. Up next, we are 0 days away from the start of the NFL season. It starts tonight. Eagles, Cowboys. Eagles dropping banner number 2. We'll also predict the AFC North. And some mildly concerning injury news for the Texans before their game Sunday against the Los Angeles Rams. Stay put.
ESPN 97.5.
We're hours away from the NFL kickoff tonight. Philadelphia Eagles are hanging their second Super Bowl championship banner. They host the Dallas Cowboys. They're 8.5-point favorites. Just going to say this right now. I think the Cowboys cover. I like the Cowboys' offense. I'm not so sure how I feel about their defense. But I think the Eagles' secondary's got some questions. Cowboys' offensive line certainly does. Honestly, just the vibe in Dallas, not great given what happened to Micah Parsons and getting shipped off to Green Bay. But I'm taking the Cowboys to cover in tonight's game. Who is the best number zero in NFL history? The NFL banned number zero and double zero. It was gone for a couple of decades. Kenny Burrow caught a touchdown while wearing double zero in 1981. Johnny Clement was a player who played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. His nickname was Mr. Zero, which is a great nickname. Currently in the NFL, Calvin Ridley and Roquan Smith wear it. Aziz Alshire wore it last season. I think he will wear it this year. The best zero in NFL history is considered to be Jim Otto, who was a Hall of Fame center for the Raiders. He wore number 00 from 1960 through 1978. 12-time Pro Bowler, 10-time All-Pro. Yeah, that's pretty damn good. Double zero. That looks so weird on alignment.
Yeah, double zero. I also think double zero looks weirder than just zero. Double zero, I don't like double zero as a number.
Oh, this guy looks like such a football player, too, with the double zero.
Jim Otto?
Yeah, Jim Otto. So Jim Otto, whenever he was playing, he looked like he's in his mid-40s, ripping heaters.
Yeah.
He's got the cowboy collar. He's got one of those helmets where the very bottom face mask is one of those two-bar ones, but he's got the bull ring at the top of it. Yeah, he's an intimidating-looking dude. He's got a little mullet going on. Double zero does look weird, though. It still looks weird. Anyway, Jim Otto, the best zero in NFL history. I can't believe they used to play with those little tiny face masks. Like, they're just crazy. What was the point? Did they stop anything?
And then, like,
I guess they'd stop you from breaking your nose. But only kind of.
Yeah, like your jaw. It's actually more your jaw, really. Like, I don't know. The helmet technology, it took them
a while.
50 years to even get it to, like, okay.
Right. From the text line for the 346, talking about tonight's game, should I start George Pickens or Jerry Jeudy as my flex? I would start Pickens tonight.
Yeah, favorable cornerback matchup. Better quarterback than Jeudy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Oof. That Brown situation.
I mean, there's a little bit of like, hey, someone's got to catch passes, so why not Jerry Jeudy? I just think Pickens, especially in a good matchup like this, I'd roll Pickens.
I think I might be doing a live stream tonight watching this game if you want to watch along on my YouTube and Twitch. As far as divisions, we're getting closer and closer to the bell of the ball, the AFC South. I'm just kidding.
This might be the only show that breaks down divisions that will be like, and finally, we get to
we've saved the main best event, for last.
The main event, the AFC South.
The AFC North favorites, the Ravens, -170. They are, I would say, the trendiest AFC Super Bowl pick. I think a lot of people look at them, they think they have the most talent. They think that they lost that game against the Bills.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Lamar Jackson's fault this time. It was Mark Andrews' fault. There's some other miscues as well. You could blame some of it on Lamar Jackson.
Lamar wasn't good in the first half, but he was good in the second.
Second half, though, he did play lights out. So the Ravens are favorites. The Bengals are second, +290. Defense is still a question mark, even if they have Trey Hendrickson back in the fold and they've got Shamar Stewart. The Steelers, +475 with Aaron Rodgers now aboard. And the Browns are +4,000. Holy crap. They are so far out of
it. It's funny just seeing it typed out.
Yeah.
I'll go first. I'll go Ravens. I think all the big three of the AFC, like, it's really hard to pick against them. It's really hard to say pick against the Chiefs, Bills, or Ravens. Especially when you factor in that I'm not picking against the Ravens in the postseason. I'm picking against them in the regular season. Right. That makes it even harder because the regular season's the part they have down pat. I guess the only thing is, the only way I could see this not being the Ravens' year in this division is Lamar gets hurt and the Bengals get enough out of their defense to snag like 10 wins. Which really, they could have pretty easily gotten 10 wins last year.
Oh, for sure.
Don't lose to the trash-ass Patriots in week one.
Yeah, don't lose to them.
Don't lose to Gerard Mayo.
Play well the first couple of games of the year.
Yeah, so it's just, I wish their defense was like only kind of bad.
Yeah, I'm taking the Ravens terrible. Too. I'm taking the Ravens too. I do not trust the Bengals defense, and there's a part of me that's wondering about Aaron Rodgers and DK Metcalf in Pittsburgh, but I need to see a couple of games of it. The games I saw from it last year with the Jets were not good. It is the Jets, so they ruin everything.
Yeah, there is a chance that he is rejuvenated just by not being a Jet.
Correct. So we shall see. A lot of people thought the Jets would be rejuvenated. We've been pretty much going all chalk when it comes to predicting the divisions.
We have.
AFC South, we predict that next. And there's some coach-on-coach crime going on in college football that you need to hear. It's hilarious. Paul Gallant Show, stay put.
ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with the Paul Gallant Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Most interactive sports talk show in town. You know how to jump in if you want. 713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitch at ESPN 975. Before we predict the AFC South, we've been predicting NFL divisions one by one with the NFL season kicking off tonight. I do want to get a little college football on. It's been a fun week as far as coaches going after other coaches. So first off, you have the two most disliked coaches in college football. I think that's fair to say. Between Dabo Swinney of Clemson and Brian Kelly with LSU, getting into a back and forth after LSU took down Clemson on Saturday. Here's what the two had to say about the other team's respective performance.
It was a hell of a game. It was a hell of a game. Down the last play. Right out of the gate. It's like getting the final exam day one of class. They made a 65, we made a 58. Neither one of us were great.
I mean, I thought we dominated him in the second half. So he's either a really good grader giving himself a 58, or he's a really hard grader on us, or he didn't see the second half, which that might be the case. He might not have wanted to see the second half.
You know what? Brian Kelly is the worst, but Dabo Swinney is the worst of the worst. So any shot against Dabo Swinney, I want to hear it. I do not care who the messenger is.
Yeah, Dabo, you can't tee it up for Brian Kelly, of all people, to get off the line of like, oh, I guess he didn't want to watch the second half because of how bad we beat him. Like, you can't.
Right.
You can't let him do that.
And by the way, I don't really buy Brian Kelly, but Clemson definitely was outplayed by LSU in the second half of that game.
And there was a touchdown that should have been called.
Right.
That was. So, like,
was this a catch?
Yeah, this was like a two touchdown game on, I guess, merit, but it, 17-10 on the scoreboard. But yeah, I think that anytime you give a chance for Brian Kelly, who, even his own fan base didn't like him until maybe now. I don't know. I don't know if they're still that positive on him, but at least he's 1-0 for the first time as LSU coach. Again, you just can't open yourself up to get dunked on by Brian freaking Kelly.
Yeah.
No one wants to hand it to Brian Kelly. And look what you made us do, Dabo. Or we have to hand it to Brian Kelly.
Why did he say that? Any of that? What was the point? Did he think it wasn't going to get to Brian Kelly either? If I'm Brian Kelly and I'm recruiting against a Clemson guy recruiting against Clemson for a specific player. I'm literally showing this clip, which someone had edited together, that shows Dabo Swinney being an idiot and Brian Kelly pouncing on a very easy mistake.
Yeah, I get what he's saying with, like, it's like having the final exam day, you know, first day of class, where it's like you're, you know, for Clemson, they're starting with the hardest game on their schedule, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Definitely. It's the ACC.
But the next part of, like, we got a 58, they got a 67. It's just like, what are you doing?
Yeah. What was that?
Yeah.
I don't understand it. Meanwhile, you got Mike Gundy. Mike Gundy's been having a week himself. Mike Gundy, I don't know how many people saw this during his pre-Oregon press conference, but he, for a brief moment of time, to talk about a game between Oklahoma State and Nebraska. They're playing Nebraska this week, I believe.
No, they're playing Oregon this week.
Oh, they're playing Oregon this week? Okay. Yeah. I guess he was talking about a game against Nebraska or something back at the
Yeah, he was talking about the first time he played.
Thank you for cleaning that up for me. But Mike Gundy was talking about the first time he played, and yeah, he showed a little nip.
I don't remember the Oklahoma State, but I remember that one because it was sleeting, and we came out of the locker room, and I was, you know the movie Christmas Story? Y'all ever watch that?
Yeah.
Where the kid goes down the... Well, that's how I came out. And when we broke the huddle, like Nebraska's defensive line had their shirts tied up. And I thought, this is not good.
He lifted up his shirt.
All the way to the nips, right. I don't think the Nebraska Cornhuskers were wearing crop tops like that, you know? But they definitely were probably wearing crop tops. You got to have that intimidation factor going. No sleeves.
Yeah.
That would be intimidating, especially given how good Nebraska was.
I was
going
to say, what helps is that he was playing 1980s and 90s Nebraska. So.
Yeah, that uniform used to be quite intimidating.
Yeah, no matter what they're wearing, they looked scary.
My uncle played college football for Kansas back in the day, and they even beat Oklahoma one year while he was there, but he said Nebraska just killed us every single time we played against them. Those teams were awesome, 70s, 80s, etc. Now, Mike Gundy and Oklahoma State play Oregon this week. On his radio show, and for some reason, this radio show that he's on did not make the audio publicly available, which is a terrible job by them.
State-run media.
Yeah, 100%. They're trying to hide this. But on that radio show, and we have to go off the transcript, Mike Gundy said that Oklahoma State spent around $7 million on its team over the past 3 years before talking about how much Oregon spent on their roster in recent years. $7 million for Oklahoma State. Oregon spent close to $40 million last year alone, says Gundy. So that was just 1 year. Now I might be off a few million. For what it's worth, Gundy in the press conference showed a lot of respect towards Oregon. And I do think it is fair that there is a pretty big disparity as far as money available for Oklahoma State, which kind of got left behind in the Big 12 while Oklahoma joins the SEC. Oklahoma State is one of those programs where you're like, oh, man, you're so close to being one of those.
They also had one billionaire mega booster who died, T. Boone Pickens.
Oh, that's rough.
Some of the money, not dried up, but they don't have a guy shoveling money. Like Texas Tech just got recently with Cody Camp.
That guy. And you know, Mike Gundy even took a little bit of a haircut on his salary because of that, which maybe that's affecting why he's just, I don't know. Letting things out.
I'd be a little bitter if I didn't give back money so we could play players. And like,
then,
I get it.
And then you see Oregon, and you're like, damn it. Like, they're spending all this money. Here is Oregon coach Dan Lanning's response to Mike Gundy at his press conference.
How much there may be a disparity between these programs.
Yeah, it sounds like there is, listening to him talk. Like I said, I got a ton of respect for Coach Gundy. You know, ultimately, how blessed are we to be in a place that's invested in winning? If you want to be a top 10 team in college football, you better be invested in winning. And we spend to win. Some people save to have an excuse for why they don't, right? And ultimately, like, he's a great coach. They've done an unbelievable job. But I want to be a team that's competing at the highest level. And we're really fortunate to be in that situation. So I can't speak on their situation. I have no idea, you know, what they got in their pockets over there. I'm sure UT Martin maybe didn't have as much as them last week, and they played. So,
I mean, it's pretty good spin zone to shift direction away from the program that has all the money, talking about, the program that they played. But that's not a Power 5 school. That's not even a 1A school. That's a 1AA school. if it is, I don't even know. Maybe it's D2. I know it's a team I've heard of a couple of
FCS.
Times.
Yeah.
Okay, it's FCS. Gotcha. You know, they're playing their annual pay us money to beat us up like we're homeless people and it's American Psycho. You know, it's one of those. Now, I get what Dan Lanning said there.
Yeah. If you want to win a national championship, you have to spin like Oregon does.
And I respect that Oregon does it. I think there's a lot of people in all of sports. It's weird that we get mad at the ownership groups that spent. No, we should be pro everyone spending. It's good. It's good when people are investing in the product that you're emotionally invested in. I understand being mad about other teams that do it and feeling like it's not fair, specifically pointing to Steve Ballmer and the Clippers situation with this fake jaw that they had for Kawhi Leonard to give him some extra money that Pablo Torre had his podcast about. Like, I get the frustration about that. But my biggest problem with it is that in the league circles, the pushback is not about this team doing things, whatever it takes to win. It's about, oh, I can't do that because they don't want to do that. I respect people who throw all of their money at a program to help them win. I really do. But I do think that this discrepancy when it comes to Oregon versus just about everybody is noteworthy. And it's one of the reasons why now with Oregon in the Big Ten, Oregon over the next couple of years is probably going to be awesome. You know?
Yeah. They're one of the teams where if you're like, hey, who's going to win a national championship in the next 5 years? It's like, well, chances are Oregon is. Just like one of these years, they're going to hit it right and get the right quarterback or get the right just group of guys or get the right breaks. And like, they're just knocking on the door to do it. So yeah, I understand. Also, I just think it's funny that it's $40 million for Oregon. Like, it's such a rounding up. Like, last year, Ohio State spent $20 million. Like, that was reported that Ohio State, Texas, and Oregon were all around $20 million. And then Gundy just shoots it up to 40.
He said, I'm not 100% sure on the specifics. So, yeah, if you want to push back on Gundy, I guess that's
only
it.
Only double. He only doubled it.
He should have pulled a Paul Galancho and just slowly increased it and not said it in the same answer. Like, not decided, like, what are you talking about? What is it, $75 million they invested in the program last year?
They're spending more than the New Orleans Saints are.
Yeah, did you know they invested $1 billion into that? They invested more than the island nation of the Philippines. You know? It's incredible. $3 trillion. Can't believe it.
Yeah.
Sean Mays behind the glass and Paul Gallant. AFC South, quick predictions. Anyone picking against the Texans? Texans plus 105 to win it. Plus 270, the Jaguars in second. Colts plus 425. Titans plus 650. Titans are the fun play because of the Cam Ward side of things, but I just don't look at Brian Callahan as a coach to be concerned about in Tennessee. Are either of these teams, the Jaguars, the Colts, threats? Daniel Jones coach team, is that a threat? Is a a Daniel Jones quarterback team, is a Trevor Lawrence quarterback team a threat?
A Trevor Lawrence-led team with offensive line question marks against a C.J. Stroud led team with offensive line question marks and one of the best defenses in the league. That's where it really comes down to. Where it's like, if one of these teams was a little bit more well-rounded, I could see it. Because the Texans aren't like some juggernaut.
No.
It's just that these teams are far away from being, I guess, like even 10 wins. Like, I can't really... The Titans are a fun team. I kind of think maybe the Titans, like, third wild card, you know, last wild card team potential with them, but I don't know. I don't know about winning the division.
Last play schedule would help him out a little bit on that front, but I like Ward. Everything I've heard about Ward.
That's really all this is me trying to invest in Cam Ward, like some sort of belief in Cam Ward.
I'd rather have Cam Ward than Caleb Williams, I'll say that.
I mean, yeah, we'll see him play, but just what I've heard from Ward field versus what I've heard from Caleb
it's entirely
off the field.
Based off of words. It's not even necessary. Yeah. Like, everyone was so obsessed with Caleb Williams in college, and I honestly just zagged a little bit against it because everyone was so sure of themselves with Caleb Williams, Danny Parkins, and honestly, the entirety of the First Things First show. You're like, well, come on. You know, got a couple of Syracuse guys, but did either of them finish third on the team in tackles for their high school football team? Did either of them finish as one of the top five defensive backs in Pinellas County in 2006?
I can say they definitely didn't do that.
Not in Pinellas County, that's for sure. I'm taking the Texans. Sean, you're taking the Texans, right? plus 105. We're pretty much going all chalk. We're going to do our official Texans preview in the other segment, in the next segment. That's right. In the next segment, we are going to pick through every single game one by one, and we're going to play football time in Houston underneath it. So get your deep steel blue pill on. Could the Texans go 17-0? Huh? Stay put and find out.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.